Kevin Stefanski talking about the Giants on Sunday. I don't think I demand victory because they're a professional team. Do I expect victory? No, not yet. Not yet. Not yet. I'm not looking at the Giants like it's not like they're playing Houston Christian or something like that. Like, this is a professional football team that nearly won on Sunday.
They did, but all I know about the Giants so far is they got routed in their opener,
yeah,
right, against Minnesota.
And I made a lot of jokes about them because of their quarterback situation and everything else.
So they get routed in their opener. They come back on the road in Washington. They did not force a punt. They gave up 7 field goals, right? They did not force a punt, their defense. So
no.
Those two things alone have me thinking absolutely the Browns should win this week.
Well, should and expect are two different things. They should win. They're favored by 6.5 points. They should win
the
football.
So do you think
game.
I have too much faith in the Browns in saying I expect them to win?
I think you do, yes. The penalties, it's sloppy. 216-474-0092. I mean, I was going to take it to Miles, but to hell with it now. Like, this is bigger than Miles and whether or not he can or can't play. I mean, this is very cavalier
and
you.
I'm fully aware. Browns, like every other team in the NFL, lose games they're not supposed to. What did the 49ers do last week? They and these teams around the league, there are a lot of teams that lose games they're not supposed to. But you brought up that schedule come October 13th when it's Philly, Cincinnati, Baltimore. You've got the Chargers with an entirely new approach. Then you have the bye week. Then the Saints, the high-octane, high-flying Saints. Then you've got the Steelers. Like, there is no reprieve there. That is, what, 6 straight games that they could lose all of them.
Yeah.
That's why I'm looking at what is available over the next few weeks. I don't want to play schedule radio.
You're looking
but that's
it
why
up.
They've
well,
got
you just
to,
did.
That's
you
why
just
they,
did.
They've got to win this game. They've got to win the game against Washington. They have, and then they've got the Raiders
but
as
you're
well.
Putting in way too much faith. They were sloppy in their first 2 games of the season. They don't have an offensive identity. I think they're trying to carve one out, but it's going to be very hard. Nobody's excited about James Hudson. He's doing the best he can. But when I got Jed Wills giving the answers that he's giving, which is completely ridiculous, and I'm trying not to fly off the handle about, I mean, listen to this for a second. Go ahead.
I feel like I'm getting there. I don't know when I'll be playing. It's up to the coaches. Maybe this week, maybe next week. It just depends, you know.
It's the number 10 overall pick. It's the number 10 overall pick. It sounds like he works in a mailroom. Hey, you going to show up to work tomorrow? Yeah, you know.
It's the Pat Shermer of offensive line.
I mean, it was unbelievable to hear that sentence yesterday. And you're going to say that you expect to win.
You're looking at it.
No.
You're looking at it from the Browns. Like, every team has a weakness. And right now that weakness is figuring out, you know, solidifying the end of that line.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it trying to be glass half full on what I just saw from Deshaun Watson. And while, no, I don't think that was an MVP performance.
I'm not even worked up about him.
But that's what I mean. To me, he calmed a lot of the fears that we were having. Because if he comes out and he looks atrocious in that game against Jacksonville, that's it. People are waving the white flag. I mean, the non-interest, the people that want to start the debate about what's next and when are we getting a new quarterback, like, that stuff got put off. And I think Deshaun has a capability, based on what I saw there, of continuing to put off that conversation.
I mean, he looked all right. I
yeah,
I don't
that's
know.
What so, I said. I agree. Yeah. I thought he looked all right.
But it didn't calm anything because you're going to play better teams. So I'm not going to sit there and, you know, Nick accuses all of us of moving goalposts and things like that. I just want to see good, solid play. So that's why I didn't come in here and rant and rave, because I saw solid enough play where I'm like, okay, you can win with this guy, and that's what I'm trying to do. I still have a bunch of people say, well, you can't make deep playoff run. Oh, I'm not worried about that right now. I'm worried about winning Sunday and keeping the main thing then, if we're going
to
do
it. Which
we
have to do.
I'm worried about winning on Sunday. That's what I want to do. Because I'm telling you, you lose to that team on Sunday, then we're talking about spiraling out of control. You take care of your business, then I'll talk about expecting wins. Then I'll talk about going on the road against the Raiders and notching and stacking wins. I can't expect it right now. I think you're taking the Giants too lightly. And I think you're giving us a little bit too much credit after we played so terribly week one. And last week was better, because it couldn't have been worse. It was better, but the offensive penalties, the sloppiness, the holding calls, these things need to be addressed and fixed before I start to say and talk tough about all these teams that we're going to play. I'll celebrate victory, and maybe I'll start to talk tough eventually, but I'm not going to talk tough now. about the New York Giants.
You know,
I think they're taking this way too lightly.
I tell you why. It is the combination. It's the fact that the defense took me right back to last year when we dominated Cincinnati in the opener, when we dominated Tennessee, when they dominated Arizona, when they dominated teams that, because of a personnel advantage, that they could just flat out go out there and humiliate. And that's what they were doing to Jacksonville. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, halfway through the third quarter, what do you have, 17 yards throwing? I see a scenario where he can do that, and that defense can do that to Daniel Jones and this Giants attack.
I mean,
with a bunch of pressure,
by the way. They can do these things. But I'm still at a point right now. 216-474-0092. Is Lima taking the Giants too lightly right now? I'm still at a point in my life with the Browns this season where I know that they can play good defense. They played good defense last year. I believe they can this year. But you could play good defense and still lose football games. And your offense is still not where it needs to be. Your running game is just starting to get a little bit. Deontay Foreman showed a little bit of fire for us on Sunday against Jacksonville. You had the great big run on the fourth down by Jerome Ford, but I don't think anybody's saying that this is the great big rushing attack like we've seen over the last so many years, because you know who's missing. You got to get your stuff with your offensive line figured out. I made the big argument before about Bill Callahan, where I think losing Bill Callahan, it's overrated, because I'm focused more on who you replace him with. Bill Callahan is a human being. You're going to lose him at some point. You lost him this offseason. What is now Andy Dickerson doing to make this situation better? What are we doing to make the guys behind? I know we can't stay deep forever with the offensive line. What are we doing to make the guys behind better? So I'm not saying he's terrible yet. I'm not going to say he's there yet. But it makes me nervous because it's only been two real games. I mean, we're still talking about extended preseason here. I have a team that doesn't have an identity offensively right now. I have a team that is sloppy offensively right now. Defense, I think in a lot of ways we might be good to go, bud. But on offense, no. And for that reason, I cannot expect victory Sunday. I have to take the Giants seriously. The Browns always have to take them seriously. They're the ones working in the building and getting ready for the game. But as an outside observer, I'm taking them seriously. I know that they've looked like garbage at times in the past, and boy, I've had a lot of fun at the Giants' expense and their fans' expense over Daniel Jones and all that stuff, but doesn't mean I'm just saying that this is an easy win, and I expect to put my feet up here in this football game.
I mean, their position player, their skill position players, Singletary at running back, Devin Singletary. Malik Nabers had a huge game last week and has had a nice start to the season. What was he, like the seventh overall pick?
Yeah, he can fly.
He's a good one, but like, have you seen Denzel Ward this year? Holy cow.
He's been great.
Holy cow.
But he's also on a pitch count right now because of a shoulder injury. 216-474-0092. I love the defense. I love the Browns defense. I think some people were worried about misdirection and things like that. So far, they've got it fixed. I don't know why the Jacksonville Jaguars didn't try misdirection.
Misdirection.
Honestly, maybe they saw some. Maybe Doug Peterson saw something that said, nope, they got this fixed and we can't do it. Maybe that's the case. Yeah. But I'm loving the defense. It's the offense that is. It was better last week, guys. It's still not through the woods. Jim and Perry, you're first up on the fan. Hello.
Good morning, fellas.
Hi, Jim.
So, I don't think that we're taking the Giants lightly. They're a garbage football team. They're a garbage franchise. These are the games you're supposed to win. And one thing I give Kevin Stefanski credit for is we always beat the team we're supposed to beat. You know, the inferior opponents. But I will say, the offense looked great last week for the first drive. I say they look for the rest of the game. But that first, Kevin Stefanski with the first drive scripted plays, they look like a Super Bowl contender. And then the rest of the game, they look like they're trying to find their identity.
Because, you know, and I have an easy explanation for that. I mean, I think you know the explanation for that, don't you, Jim?
Yeah. Well, of course I do.
Yeah, other teams are allowed to make adjustments too, and we're still not where we need to be offensively.
You know, I will flat out say it live on the air. I am a Deshaun Watson hater. I don't like him. He makes it hard for me to like this team, to support whatever he's doing. I don't, you know what I mean? I'm not going to get into that.
Well, boy, you're really going to like 845. That's all I can say. Continue, Jim.
So, what was his interview yesterday or 2 days ago? You know, and he said, and this is one thing I give him credit for, I think his confidence is starting to come back, because during his interview or his press time, whatever they call it, he did say that coaches can only take players so far, and it wasn't like an FU to Kevin Stefanski, but what he said is he's going to continue to play the way that got him to where he's at. And all I'm going to say is he needs to start showing up, like, for the whole game. Because some of those throws he made to, like, Judy and to David Bell, I was like, all right, let's do it. But then it just disappears, and then it comes back. I just want to see some consistency out of them.
Jim,
and as far as
what? Go ahead. Well, I got to let you go because I got to do some other people here. And thank you very much for the call. When I hear Watson say – Jim says that Watson said that. I'm not sure – I'm looking for a clip right now where he might have said that. I'm thinking it might be Watson 01 over there, so I could, you know, hear just for reference, because I didn't hear him say that yesterday specifically. But remember, what was it? Amanda Guerra said in the pregame on Sunday against the Jags that he was focused on being a facilitator in this offense. See, what I was so excited about, and this is a good thing offensively, is that I think that they look more of like a Kevin Stefanski offense and tried to protect him and make him comfortable. And then once he could start to feel a little confident again, he was able to let the ball fly a little bit. It was just on the wide receivers to catch the damn thing, and they couldn't catch the damn thing. Well, it was on Amari Cooper to catch that great pass, and he didn't catch that great pass, and that was a very frustrating thing. Because I am trying to build a quarterback's confidence right now. And for a guy like Amari Cooper to drop that pass, it was almost inconceivable and unforgivable for a wide receiver who's been that excellent for this football team for so long, especially when I'm in such a thin mode of confidence for my quarterback. But I thought they did so much better last week to build his confidence. That's why I do expect better, but I don't expect them to just beat the Giants on Sunday.
I think they were very worried about Deshaun Watson after week one, and I do think Stefanski kind of took over, went back to the basics, tried to do the things that he might have done, whether it was Jacoby Brissett, whether it was P.J. Walker, whether it was DTR, and then he saw what Watson could handle. Watson started getting more and more comfortable, more and more accurate, which was a huge change from what we saw in week one. And I think after that, you saw the feel come out again, that feel that Deshaun Watson has in a pocket. You saw none of that in week one, but all of a sudden he started dancing around back there, and you could see the confidence start to come back.
John and Wadsworth, you're next up on the Fan.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Not bad, John. Go right on ahead.
So I think you guys are both kind of right. I mean, Anthony, the Giants are not great, and this is a game you definitely expect to win. But, I mean, Ken, you're also correct in saying that you just don't take anything for granted, the whole any given Sunday thing. I think the only thing that really worries me about this is, I mean, Stefanski showed this last week, and he showed it a lot in the last two seasons. He's got this tendency to take his foot off the gas in the third quarter if the Browns are dominating. And he just leaves the door open for teams to come back in.
John, John, real quick, let you back in. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were taking the foot off the gas. They were throwing a ton, even in the fourth quarter.
I think what John's saying, I mean, you go back to the Jets game a couple of years ago, there does seem to be we're going to sit on it here for a minute, and all of a sudden teams find their way back into it. You go to that 2020 season where the Titans found a way to jump back in, and then the Cowboys game. Remember, I turned the TV off and just stared at my phone until my phone gave me the highlight that the Browns had won the game on the notifications. I was that terrified there, John. So, yeah, historically there's that feeling. I can't take that away from you, bud.
Yeah, I just think too many times we've said, like we did last week, you know, watching the first half, we come out of a game going, oh, well, it should have been a blowout, but it wasn't. And I think that's my concern, is that even though the Giants aren't great, I mean, let's face it, if we contain Malik Nabers, pretty much you've contained the New York Giants, really. But I think that's my only concern, is because I don't like leaving these teams to hang around. And we've seen in the first couple weeks of the season already, these teams that we didn't think were going to win games are winning games. The New Orleans Saints are putting up, like, college Madden numbers. And, you know, the Falcons come out and did what they did against Philadelphia. So, you know, I don't think you can take it for granted that they're just going to come out and boat race the Giants for four quarters. But, I mean, they should. And I would love to see it, and I think you guys have made excellent points about the first few weeks of the season being preseason, and it's totally playing out the way you guys talked about, but I just don't want to take anything for granted. We've got business to take care of.
I agree.
We can't be looking at anybody.
I agree, John, and thank you very much for the call. I have a lot of faith in this defense, and then going up against Daniel Jones, if Daniel Jones looked good against this defense, I know that there's been a lot of people saying they're going to do a lot of things if teams beat each other in college football. I mean, there's a lot of things I might just put on the line there. If Daniel Jones finds a way to look good about this defense, You think I was mad and ugly in years past? I can't imagine how I'd feel on Monday. Daniel Jones is going to look, he should look terrible against this pass rush. He should look terrible against this secondary, whether Miles has a foot injury or not.
Bet live with Hard Rock Bet. Real-time wagering till the very last play. Missing the kickoff doesn't mean all bets are off.
Game on the guy who hasn't bet yet.
Browns and Giants Sunday. Huntington Bank Field. And to talk about it, we welcome in Mary Kay Cabot from the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. Mary Kay, Lima has a question for you. Lima, go.
Yeah, given the news yesterday of one of the all-time newsbreakers calling it a career because he wants his time back, he wants to spend time with other people in his life, Woj had the ultimate bomb yesterday that he was walking away from millions of dollars. Mary Kay had a detail in his story about showering with his cell phone at all times. Is that something you, as a newsbreaker, does?
I have known to have it nearby. Now, one thing I do is I walk. I'm a walker. So anyone that sees me on my little jaunts around Rocky River here, you will see me always with my computer on my back in a drawstring bag. So I know that is very sad, but that is just the life of a beat writer.
You have had to, I'm not saying, I don't think you're sad. You have had to stop your walks and like sit down on the sidewalk and write something?
Numerous times, yes, absolutely.
Wow.
It always comes in handy. And I really don't go anywhere without my computer. It can be a restaurant. I mean, I'll leave it in the car, but I have it with me at all times.
So I had asked the question earlier in the show. Like, I understand Woj was making an incredible amount of money, providing him with an incredible lifestyle, but a lifestyle that you can't possibly ever truly enjoy. Mary Kay, have you ever been on vacation and had to, with family or friends, and had to walk away from the nice evening because you have to write 1,000 words on the Browns swing tackle?
Many, many times that has happened to me, especially because the Browns have had so much dysfunction over the years that I remember trying to go to mom prom with my son at St. Ignatius, and something happened with Johnny Manziel, and I had to, before I walked into mom prom, or right before, I made it to mom prom, and I made it on time because I was always very committed to getting to every one of my children's activities, but it wasn't without, like, you know, banging out a little bit of a Johnny Manziel story before I walked in.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. When's Jed Wills going to play?
I would say he's a couple weeks out. I think Jack is closer. He got back to practice a little bit sooner, and he seems to be pretty much ready to go. He is full go on the injury report this week, whereas Jed has been limited.
What's taking so long? I mean, this was what? This was a scope? What's taking so long here?
You know, every injury is different, and every body heals differently, so you never know. I was told that DeJuan's torn MCL wasn't as bad as Jet's. So it depends on the severity of the injury. You can't compare apples to apples, and we shouldn't judge Jed negatively for not being back yet.
So your thought is that it will be Conklin this week, or no, not ready yet?
You know, I'm going to say if I were the Browns, I would probably ease Jack Conklin back into it, put him in there on some third downs. Now, this week you've got DeJuan Jones ailing a little bit with his torn MCL recovery. He's got a sore knee. So I would probably throw Jack in there to give James Hudson a little help every once in a while, maybe on third down. But you might need a little help on the other side as well. So maybe Jack is a bit of a swing tackle this week.
Mary Kay with us. We were talking about Deshaun Watson, his performance last week. I thought it was a very nice bounce back performance. I still think he's far away from being the Deshaun Watson we need him to be. How did you feel about his performance? And do you think we're going to see an even better version this week?
Well, I will say this. If we had been told David Njoku is not going to play in that game and Amari Cooper is only going to catch 3 of 8 targets for 16 yards, I don't know if very many of us would have put that down as a victory. So I think the fact that Deshaun Watson was able to pull that off without his top two targets, I think that was pretty remarkable. If you look at Brock Purdy, let's see what Brock Purdy is going to be able to do when he doesn't have Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel. A quarterback sometimes is only as good as the supporting cast. And I think that hopefully for Deshaun, he and Amari will kind of get it back together soon. But he's not going to have David this week, so I can't say that he's going to go out there necessarily and light it up. He is heating up with Jerry Jeudy. That's good for him. But I think that, you know, right now they're a little challenged in the passing game until Deshaun and Amari kind of get it together.
What's going on with Amari Cooper? Why is he struggling?
I don't know. You know, we have him today, so looking forward to talking to him. And I think it could be a combination of things. First of all, he missed all of OTAs, and he sat out the mandatory minicamp. And maybe those reps do matter. Coaches certainly think they do. Players don't necessarily think they do. But maybe all of that practice and all of those reps and all of that time on task, maybe it does mean something. And then the other thing is, of course, he was the subject of trade rumors. And different guys respond to things differently. Perhaps this is in his head a little bit. And I don't know. We will ask him that today. Maybe that has nothing to do with it. Maybe it's just nothing at all, and he will go out there this week and catch 8 passes for 110 yards and 2 touchdowns. So we just kind of have to see where it's going, but I do feel like it's going to get better, and Deshaun certainly feels like that.
Heading over to the defensive side of the ball, Myles Garrett, obviously dominant again through the first 2 games of the year. At the same time, he is dealing with a foot issue. We were just kind of mulling it over, given the schedule, and we know what a gauntlet it becomes once they start with Philly on October 13th. No reprieve there. Every week is going to be a challenge after that. Should they get him a week off for some rest before then? Because they don't have that bye until the middle of November.
Well, they'll monitor it. If it gets to the point where he needs a blow like that, then they'll give it to him. But he's never been one to want that. He always wants to be out there for his team. He's one of those guys that will drag himself out onto the field in some kind of pain. I mean, you can always appreciate that about Myles Garrett. So he's not coming off that field unless he absolutely has to. And then they will monitor it, and they'll limit him when he needs to be limited. He only played, I think, 41 snaps in this past game. That seemed to be pretty manageable. It didn't really look like it was bothering him much until he tried to chase down Trevor Lawrence on that 33-yard run. After that, he was struggling over there a little bit. But I think he should be okay. If he's not, they'll dial it back. Same thing with Denzel Ward. He only played 11 snaps. He should probably play more this week with the shoulder. But these are 2 things to keep an eye on.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us here. Bill Callahan, how much do they miss him?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. I think more so than anything right now, they miss their left tackle. And that's basically what's been going on. So let's see what happens when he has a full complement of players back and when DeJuan Jones isn't over there suffering from not only now a sore knee, but also a shoulder injury that's been bothering him. We watched him injure that shoulder down at the Greenbrier, so I don't think he's been 100% yet, but he's another one of those guys where he knows the guys need him. He knows that he has to be out there, especially with Jed needing a little bit more time to come back on the left side. So let's see how it all goes in a couple of weeks.
We had debated in the lead-up to the season, we're talking to Mary Kay Cabot right now on the hotline, about this offense being tailored for Deshaun Watson, and that is what Ken Dorsey was going to be bringing from Buffalo. What have you seen so far with the offense? Because last week, we tend to think, our amateur eyes, that it looked a lot more like a Kevin Stefanski offense.
Well, here's the thing that everyone has to remember. Every Monday, or Sunday or Monday, everyone wants to make these sweeping conclusions about a team, about an offense. Just because they pulled out the jumbo formation and went with 2 tight ends and Zach Zinter and Nick Harris in this game, that doesn't mean they have found their identity and they're back to doing things Kevin Stefanski's way. You do what you have to do in each week to win the football game. If that requires jumbo, you go jumbo. If it requires 3 wides, you do that. 4 wides, go ahead. It's whatever it takes to win the football game. This is a multiple offense that can do many, many things. So I think it will evolve over time. I've been saying this for a long time. It's a work in progress. It's a brand new offense. They are still trying to find what they do well and what they need to throw out of the playbook. So I don't think that you can say, oh, geez, look what they had to do. It's not that. It's what they had to do that week to win that game in those conditions with those offensive linemen and no David Njoku and different things like that. So it's way too early to start saying, oh, quarterbacks aren't throwing long anymore. Well, I just don't think that you can make really sweeping conclusions like that after week two.
All right, the Bengals 0-2, the Ravens 0-2, the Steelers 2-0, but their offense looks like it once again is on life support. Mary Kay's AFC North overrated.
No, it's not overrated. Both the Bengals and the Ravens have played the two-time defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs, so that's always a tough assignment, of course. So, no, I don't think so. There's a long, long way to go. And a couple of these teams, including the Bengals, always start slow and then heat up as they go along. So we'll see how it goes. But I will say this. It is setting up for quite the Hard Knocks AFC North in those final six games of the season. I think that's going to live up to all the hype.
Are they filming now or do they film later? I know it starts on December 3rd, but when do they come in?
I don't think they're going to start filming yet. We haven't seen anything yet. I think it'll be more towards the end of the season there.
Mary Kay, 85 degrees coming up on Sunday at home. Should we scrap the idea of a dome altogether now that the weather is amazing?
Great question.
No, I don't think it's time to scrap that yet. It'll be interesting to see what the decision is, but no, not time for that yet.
Mary Kay, we thank you very much for the time. All the very best to you and yours, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Hopefully you don't miss out on any life events tweeting today. Mary Kay, we wouldn't want you to go the way of Woj.
I won't. I have a big weekend coming up, and I'm not missing anything.
All right, Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Wonderful stuff from her.
And Daryl's been covering the Browns like crazy this week as they get ready to play the Giants. Hi, D.
Hi, Daryl. How are you?
My condolences, Jeff, on the van.
Thank you, bud.
Thank you. I got to tell you, Jeff has been such a trooper this week. It has been such a solemn week, and we just want to thank everyone that has paid their condolences to the van. It has been it's been heart-wrenching at times to hear the stories of the rust falling on the road and the tailpipe making special noises. And so I think it's been great to reflect this past week. And
wait a minute. I thought it was my van, not yours, Ian.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just sitting here because I know it's too emotional for you to talk about. I'm just taking it off your chest. I can see the tears in your eyes. And so I want to be able to speak for you, Jeff.
I think it's so nice that Andy, is eulogizing it for you, number one. And then, number two, I hope you play Cats.
We already have, numerous times.
One gun salute might be a little much.
Menigan's enjoying it. Just so you know, Daryl, yesterday I took the plates off of it. I stuffed the title and the car keys in the glove box as instructed.
Yes.
And sometime today it will be leaving Northeast Ohio and moving along to be a charitable donation that hopefully helps somebody somehow.
In fact, the muffler itself gave the car a 21-gun salute. Prior to,
I was just going to say we were going to line up 21 jalopies and turn them all over and have them all backfire at the same time, like with the buck.
Led by Schlepper.
That'd be fantastic.
Best part about it, Daryl, mechanic told me if it weren't for the rusty body, he'd have fixed it.
It's just sad.
I know.
So sad.
All right.
Thank you for all of your thoughts and prayers, Northeast Ohio, for the van.
Speaking of things that are broken down, how's the tackle position for the Browns? Menigan just said, wow.
I don't think it's nearly as sad as your van situation.
Thank goodness. Oh, goodness.
I don't think they'll be playing Cats for any of them anytime soon.
That's wonderful.
On a positive note, DeJuan Jones said yesterday that he's expecting to play Sunday. Jack Conklin had his first full practice yesterday since he began practicing. So I would say that things might be looking up.
All right, Daryl. So of the four, let's go of the three, who's going to be playing tackle this week?
Well, I'm saying with the same guys that have been playing, and just until otherwise. Like, I mean, because I don't know if Jack's going to have a full practice again today, right? So you know, for now, I think it's still Hudson and DeJuan. And then if, you know, Jack is healthy enough and able to come back, then him. But, like, I don't get the impression that Jed Wills is close. Like, I mean, he basically told us yesterday, you know, he's waiting for the thumbs up from everyone that he can play. So that just it doesn't sound like a guy who is ready to get back out there. You know, from a physical standpoint, he's itching to get out there. You know, he's obviously he's a little frustrated by this whole situation, but, you know, the body can do what the body can do. So I think Conklin is the one that has the best shot of playing this week against the Giants.
Daryl Ryder joining us, our Browns beat reporter. After what we saw in the opener against Dallas and then a game against Jacksonville that, man, it started great, and then, boy, they squeezed it out and hung on, so that's good. After those two performances, am I wrong to think that this game against the Giants is one the Browns should flat-out win, period?
No, because it is one that they should flat-out win, period.
Okay. I feel that way. I think the Browns are a superior team. Do you think they're ready to make, I don't want to say a statement, Daryl, but are they ready to put it together and play four quarters and actually do what they're supposed to do against a team they're supposed to beat?
I mean, if you compare week one to week two and the improvement that we saw in all three phases, then I would probably say, yeah, I mean, they're, you know, trending in that direction. You know, I think this could be another good week for the Browns rushing attack. I asked Ken Dorsey this morning kind of about that. Then the perception that they got back to their bread and butter against Jacksonville, and let's be honest about it, New York comes in with not exactly the greatest of run-stopping defenses. So I think this is an opportunity for Jerome Ford and Dante Foreman once again. This doesn't have to be the Deshaun Watson show again. So when I look at New York, you know, that for me is a real glaring weakness. And then, yeah, I mean, Daniel Jones offensively, right? I mean, he still has the threat to run coming off that Achilles. Doesn't look like he's really lost a step. Again, not afraid to run. So really, you just keep him in the pocket and force him to do what he usually does, and that's make bad decisions with the ball. And if they're able to do that, then I think that the Browns are going to have a real fun afternoon.
All right.
I've got one more football thought for you here. I'm not concerned about Amari Cooper and Deshaun Watson after two games. Should I be?
No. Okay. I'm not either. I mean, Amari's a pro. He's human. I know everyone wants to point to the fact that he's now 30 years old. I didn't know that when you turn 30 that all of a sudden you can't do anything anymore, but the pass he dropped against Dallas, it was a little out in front of him. You know, it's not like it was dropped in the breadbasket. Now, the one against Jacksonville, it was. He should have caught that ball. And when we talk to him in the locker day, he's going to talk about that he should have caught that ball. You know, Deshaun Watson said yesterday that he's not worried about it, that, you know, they, you know, work on it in practice and whatnot. So, no, I'm really not all that concerned right now through two games because Amari Cooper's dropped two footballs.
So, Daryl, I was just curious because I saw the story cross like 2 days ago. We talked about it for a second. There are thoughts about Burke Lakefront Airport maybe perhaps becoming a new site for a stadium. I'm just curious. I doubt you probably have any thoughts on this, but what do you think about maybe just kind of stopping what they're doing right now and trying to figure it out and lay out the plans to see if the stadium should be where Burke is now? What do you think of that?
I have a better chance of winning the Mega Millions than the city of Cleveland building a stadium for the Browns at Burke Lakefront Airport.
Why do you say that?
Because it's going to cost a bloody fortune to do it.
Like how much?
And let's put it this way, billions of dollars more than what the current Brook Park proposal is. And I'm going to throw in the Brook Park development into that.
If they want to put a stadium at Burke, it would cost billions more than they would put a new stadium in at Brook Park?
Correct. First of all, they have to redesign it, okay? So the construction cost just for the redesign to accommodate that is up Then you've got the actual construction costs, which, by the way, this thing is not going to be, it would not be done in time for 2029, which means you still have to spend money on the existing stadium to just keep it running. For the delays in the annual delays, I mean, that just adds hundreds of millions of dollars per year to the cost. And the city put out those studies earlier this week. If they just let the federal grants go by the wayside and they don't want to pay any penalties, the earliest they can close the airport is 2036. If they want to move forward with a rapid closure of the airport, then they're looking at just under $10 million in reimbursable money, and it and that has to like be paid in cash. Like, you can't finance that. So a big chunk of that goes to the FAA to reimburse grants. That airport is
$10 million for basically nothing.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you're reimbursing the state and the FAA for money that had been pumped into that airport. And then also, too, you're probably going to have to reimburse the businesses that use that airport that have also pumped money into that airport. So, like, it's, I have been saying it for the longest time, closing that airport, it's a time-consuming process. It is not something that happens quickly. So, yeah, the Browns are doing, I'll tell you this, I know that the Browns are doing their due diligence with that proposal, but in the end, I think that it's going to be what they've already said, and that is, it's not an option.
Is there a timeline on this? Do we know when? I mean, at some point, with 28, you know, if you want to build something, you better start building soon. And I know I ask you this, and how close are we to a decision?
It's a 36-month construction schedule. Approximately, right? So if opening day is August of 2029, you would want to start no later than the middle of 2026, if I'm doing my math correctly, and there's a chance I'm not. So, you know, they've got to make a decision. Then once they make the decision, they've got to go through the process of getting the financing together, getting the public contribution together and all that. They have been working behind the scenes at the state and the local level to do that. And also in the private sector, they've been working to get all those ducks in a row so that once they do make the decision, they can move full steam ahead with whatever that decision is, whether it's going to be they stay on the lakefront or they go ahead and build in Brook Park.
So you're saying Burke makes no sense at all. That's really the bottom line.
No. It doesn't. Like I said, you know, I think the Browns are trying to do right by Cleveland and the county by just, you know, and they've already entertained the idea, and now they're kind of doubling back and re-entertaining it a little bit, just that, okay, fine, you know, this is what your proposal would cost, and this is what we would be willing to put towards that, which I don't think the contribution is going to be different than what it is in Brook Park, which is $1.2 billion. So, okay, fine, if the Dome is going to cost $5 billion plus to build, we're only going to put in 1.2, which means you guys got to pick up the remaining 3.8 plus. And how does that save taxpayers' money? You know what I'm saying? So, by the way, does not include the money that needs to be pumped into the existing stadium just to keep it running. You know, I'm not even talking about making the place pretty. I'm just saying, like, to fix stuff that needs to be fixed and replaced and updated and all that kind of stuff. So,
gotcha.
I think when the dust settles, the Burke option will be quickly dismissed when everybody gets a look at those financial figures, because and that doesn't even include infrastructure. Like in Brook Park, the infrastructure is there. You got two interstates, two state routes, rail lines there for RTA, the airports across the railroad tracks. Like, you couldn't pick a better spot from an infrastructure standpoint. The lakefront, they want to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to reconfigure that and switch the shoreway into a boulevard, this, that, and the other. And getting to Burke Lakefront Airport is, I know this is shocking to say, because getting to the stadium's hard enough on game day, but it's not easy to do either. So there's all kinds of infrastructure stuff that has to be done to that. There's engineering stuff, because that's landfill. Like, One end of the airport, that's where they take the sludge they dredge up from the Cuyahoga River and dump it. You know what I'm saying? So,
all right, so you're saying,
like, I just think,
Daryl, you're saying you don't know a whole lot about this, and if you want more, you should go listen to, I'm kidding. You need to do a little more research. I'm telling you, Daryl knows more about this than anybody in town. And listen to the podcast, because he's got a lot more on there, too. Daryl, outstanding work, my friend.
Thank you, Dave.
You bet. And Jeff, I wish you luck in finding your next band.
Check your phone. I sent you a gift.
Oh.
Okay.
Daryl Ryder, our Browns beat reporter. He's brought to us by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. 216-474-0092. I'll throw this one at you. After two games, what image do you have of the Browns? To me, unfortunately, it's this. Boy, they look undisciplined, and they're getting penalized like crazy. That's the only thing I can think of. They want to run the ball. They want to have an attacking defense and everything else. I think the defense has been pretty good, Andy. But I also think that the offense has been flat for a lot of reasons. I'm not pointing even any fingers, but it's been really flat.
They look like a team that's still in preseason. That's what I see, especially because of the penalties. The defense has shown that the defense can come up with big plays when they need them to, especially a big stop. And they did that last week.
I think that's right. You know, the Cowboy game is still in my head a little bit, although I don't think the defense got shredded against the Cowboys by any means. You know, the total yardage figure was less than they gave up per game last year when they were number one in the NFL in that category. But I thought the defense did a nice job against Jacksonville. You know, it's the NFL in an age where offenses benefit from the rules like crazy. And if you can hold a team to what they held Jacksonville to, well done. That's the way to do it right there.
But yet we're seeing teams run the ball more.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
Weird. But
still, it's still an offensive. The rules are geared toward the offense, regardless of whether it's run or pass. Especially pass.
I also thought it was interesting. Somebody brought up the question about short passing game and why we're seeing that, and is that because of formation, because the teams are bringing safeties down and trying to figure that. And then you go back and we talk about what Deshaun's numbers look like, and Deshaun, 50% of his passes are 9 yards or less. I also like the way he started to describe, but didn't really give us a lot of. He kind of teased us with the whole Ken Dorsey concept of green light, red light, yellow light on down and distance situations.
Green light.
Obviously, you're looking at red light situations as anything.
Red light.
You know, second down and more than 10, which they find themselves in too many times.
He went color on us there. It was a little confusing.
I don't know that he even knew it. Like, I think he thinks second and seven is a yellow light situation. Second and seven is probably a yellow light situation.
Okay.
But he started to describe that, and it was like, okay, I kind of get what he's saying. I mean, if you can make football for simpletons, then you've got my vote. I wish it was
we qualify for part of that.
I wish it was an election for offensive coordinators.
Cool Ray is in Bedford. Hello, Cool Ray.
Hey, Cool Ray.
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
You are, as always.
Yo, I've been watching these two games, and I have to be honest with you. I will put blame on two people, but my thing is, it's easier to just jump on Deshaun Watson. You know, we get it. He coming off a shoulder injury. Just like you said, most of the passes are like 6 yards or less or 9 yards or less. But here's my problem with this, is when you look at the progression of other people who left this system, you guys know of anybody. I used to despise Baker Menzel when he was on this team.
Right? No!
Baker Mayfield. I defied him so much, I called him Baker Menzel. So, but I also said he need to go somewhere away from Kevin Stefanski and for him to blow up and become better. Now look. So let's not act like Deshaun Watson is a rookie quarterback who don't know how to read defenses, who don't know what he's doing. Let's honestly start looking at the coach and the offensive coordinator, which is also the coach. Like, you can send a play in, but if the play is designed for all your receivers to run deep routes or curl in and there's nobody to throw the ball, and Deshaun Watson is sitting there trying to extend the play instead of throwing the ball away, I would put that on Deshaun. That Dallas game was a telltale sign. Dallas is a horrible team, but it came over here and it beat the brakes out of my Browns. And the coach sat there, and then just look at the Jaguar. The Jaguar team is a horrible team. It's been a horrible team for years. and that we barely beat them. So I'm looking at this as saying, I don't have any confidence that my team, the team I love, can win 10 games. And this is about coaching. At some point, we need to start looking at the person leading this team other than blaming the players. We all know players get injured. Every team goes through that. Every team goes through the injuries. Every team goes – and we all know, and every year these players, you're going to switch up for contracts for whatever reason. So the same issue that the Browns are having other team have, it seems like we can't get out of our way. And what's the and you got to start looking at who's leading the team. Now, it may be the front office or it could be the coach. But one thing about it is he made sure that none of our starters played in preseason. So don't give me this that
– You don't think they had a conversation with front office about that too? You think that's 100% on Kevin?
That's not 100%, but guess what? You're going to be the one that when the bullets are shot, you're going to be the one that's going to stand in front of those bullets.
Well, that's true. You were the GM. Yeah, I agree with you on that. That's 100%.
So at the end of the day, you made it seem like this team was ready to go. And I don't want to hear this like, oh, coaches are using the first couple weeks, the first month is preseason. No. That's a loser mentality because you can't – if you lose in those first 4 weeks, you're not – may not be able to come back and win to get into the playoffs. So the preseason was there for continuity, to get the little – to get the quirks together, to show what needs to be done. And now look. Look what our team looked horrible. Well, now we can nitpick, and now we're going to go against another horrible team who's been horrible for 10 years.
Who's good, Cool, right? Who's a good team?
Cool is good.
You tell me everybody's horrible, but I'm just – And by the way, okay. I'm not making an excuse.
Thanks, buddy.
To say that, you know, you should accept these first two games as preseason. They look like a team that's playing in the preseason. I can stand here and say that with full authority. They look like a preseason team. And yet they're in second place for whatever that's worth after two games.
Teams look like preseason teams right now?
Yeah, they don't. Even Kansas City doesn't look like they're completely in rhythm.
I'd agree with that.
I mean, I was just watching them the other day.
And yeah, I'd agree with that.
Cincinnati was, you know, maybe a pass interference call away from getting a win right there, too. So it was pass interference. So let's be honest.
I honestly think in most NFL seasons, you know, it can get away from you early and put you in a really bad bind. But I don't think.
We're good at that. We know that.
Well, to me, it's four games, five games. Before you really, you know, catch your stride. But you better not, while everybody's trying to catch their stride, you better not go, you know, 1-4, you know, 1-3, 0-4. You better win some of those games. And you find out what kind of team you have once you kind of hit October.
Pittsburgh is
second week.
Pittsburgh
week.
Is not in an offensive stride, but yet they have figured out a way to win two games.
Yeah. They've won two games, which is, you know, it's kind of what you're looking for there, isn't it?
Yeah. Although I think the other part, though, too, is you got to remember the Ravens and Bengals have both played the Chiefs, too. So you got to put that in perspective, too. It's who you're playing against.
Valid.
I don't know. It just it feels like everything's inverted in the AFC North. But if you look at the standings, you'd be like, oh, well, it should be the other way around. But it's not. I'll take 1-1 after one. I'm okay with that. Because we all know that pit you get in your stomach when you start 0-3. And, man, you do not want to start 0-4. So we're not going down that road, at least.
No, they did what they had to do last game, and that's bounced back with a nice win on the road where they had some struggle last year. Josh is in Grand River, Don Shula hometown. Hi, Josh.
So I'm going to back up a Cool Ray's call. So we all know that the NFL didn't used to be like it is today, to where your players don't have to go and work a physical job in the off season to get themselves ready for the season, aka preseason. Hence why we have the run-ins and issues that we have of guys not being there to contribute, star players taking the preseason and OTAs off. It's not just us, it's all the teams. So I disagree with him.
Okay, Josh. Anything more?
Nope, that's it.
All right, Josh, thank you very much. Josh calling from Grand River.
Are you with me on this? On this whole what they look like? If you're talking about a team that is searching for its identity and your number one receiver is not in sync with your starting quarterback. Your number two receiver is hurt. You know, and so I say receiver, pass catcher, when I'm talking about David Njoku. And so now you're missing both those elements. You're missing your best running back. You're missing your tackles. You could be missing three out of your four tackles going into this one. I understand why they're out of sync. So I think that if you believe in this team and you think they can get better as they keep moving forward, you better believe in the defense right now. Because they're just like in Pittsburgh. You better believe in the defense right now if you think Pittsburgh's going to have life or at least be on the other side of 500 when it's all said and done.
Dan is in Lakewood. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah, hey, guys. You know, I just, what Corey was talking about, you know, Watson is absolutely to blame. I don't think there's any question about it. I think if you just go back and look with Flacco, how he moved the team last year, I know it ended badly, but the team actually looked like an offense. They were moving the ball, 300 yards, passing. And I'm not saying, you know, Watson can't come back, but I'm saying up until now, he's been a very big part of this problem.
Dan, thank you very much. We might be hearing from him momentarily here on Baskin and Phelps.
Hmm.
I think the Giants game gives him an opportunity against a defense that's given up a lot of yards, Andy, to go out and have the offense sing, which, of course, it did not do against Dallas and did not do for most of the game against Jacksonville. You know, 5 points in the second half is not singing after having a 16-play drive to start the game and a 12-play field goal drive. That is not getting it done. Tommy's in Seven Hills. Tommy, you got about 30 seconds, buddy.
Hey, Tommy.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, real quick. I'm not saying you guys, and I'm just saying in general, could we just like chill a little bit? It's week two. We don't know what they're going to look like.
Thank you.
Yeah, we don't know what they're going to look like for a few weeks. I mean, we're 1-1. We're in second place. Let's just all take a deep breath and let this play out for a little bit. Yeah, he hasn't looked good in the past few years that he's been here. I get it. Let's just take a deep breath and see where this goes. Give it a few more weeks, guys. You have a great day.
You too.
Tommy, thank you very much. I told Tommy 30 seconds. He went 30 seconds. Tommy, that was beautiful.
He could do radio.
Well done. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, Browns players in Berea. We're hoping to hear from Deshaun Watson, so stay tuned. It's Baskin and Phelps right here.
We head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Devin McCourty, former NFL corner, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the call for Thursday Night Football with Iron Eagle, Pats Jets. Devin, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. Y'all got a lot going on. Some issues over there.
We got some emotions. Listen, Deshaun called them the Jets. They play the Giants on Sunday, and I was simply following his lead, and my co-host cannot let me have it. I am curious. How, if you're in the locker room for this Browns-Giants game, the Browns coming off a win, the Giants 0-2, how easy is it to overlook an opponent?
It happens. I think human nature, it happens naturally, even though you try to talk about it as much as you can. You know, you have head coaches that will make the practice week really hard to try to, you know, prepare you and get you ready. I would say that happens more or less like later in the season when the records are kind of defined. I think right now at this point in the season, you look like if I'm Cleveland, I look at the Giants, yeah, they're 0-2, but you give them a kicker last week, they might actually win that game. You know, so that has to play a part. I don't think you can just walk in and say, all right, they're 0-2, we're 1-1. You know, we won last week, but, you know, we kind of got handled in week one by Dallas, so I think both of these teams are still trying to find their way early in the season, so I don't think either one would ever really think about overlooking the other one right now.
Do you think that being in the locker room of a team that is 0-2 can bring forth a sense of desperation for the guys to get that first win of the season? Is that something that happens this early in the season?
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it desperation, but there's definitely a sense of urgency. Like, you don't want to start the season 0-3. And I think especially, you know, when you go into training camp for everyone, it's like all of these high hopes. What we could be, the new free agent acquisitions, the rookies are now. So I think it's such a buildup for every team to start the season. And you lose your first two, and now you're going to that third game. I think it's kind of the hope if we win this third game, we still have a chance for the playoffs. I think teams that go 0-3 to start, you start to feel like, man,
I don't know if we're going to turn this around and be good enough to actually make the playoffs. You still keep fighting. You still think you can make it work. But a lot of doubt, I think, starts to, you know, come into your mind. Once you're 0-3, then it possibly could turn into 0-4. So I think the Giants will have a little bit of a sense of urgency to come in and try to get a win this weekend.
So when you're in the situation of the Browns, where they're 1-1 going into this team, going up against this team in the Giants that should have that sense of urgency, how do you manufacture it to try and match that level going into this week?
I think you have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, well, who are we and what are we doing? We're playing a Giants team that through the first 2 weeks, we should feel like we're better than, and we should enter this game with the mindset we got to go beat this team. I think especially because if I'm Cleveland, I'm looking at the rest of our division. You know, Baltimore is 0-2 right now. Cincinnati's 0-2 right now. You look out there and you're like, okay, we can make something happen right here. And everyone's talking about every other team. And right now, Pittsburgh's in the league. That's 2-0. All right, where can we fall into place? Maybe Pittsburgh loses this week and we get a win. And all of a sudden, we're leading the division. So I think you can't really focus on what the Giants are playing for, but really put in perspective what you're playing for and what you're trying to do with this season and then play to that, because that should be enough to get you over the top and try to go get a win.
Devin McCourty on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's on the Westwood One call with Ian Eagle. Pats Jets tonight. You can hear it on 92.3 The Fan. So specific to this game, obviously there's been a big talk about offenses being down around baseball. But, you know, through 2 weeks, Aaron Rodgers, around football rather, and baseball too. That's for another day. But when it comes to Aaron Rodgers' performance through the first 2 weeks of the season, how close do you think he is to being old Aaron Rodgers, as it were?
I think this is a new Aaron Rodgers. I don't, you know, when you say old Aaron Rodgers, it makes me think of like years ago when he was playing. I don't think he has to be that. I think those teams in Green Bay needed him to be a different version of himself, and he's an older player now. He's coming off a torn Achilles, but the thing he can still do is he can put the ball wherever he needs to put it, and I think this team will get more and more familiar with each other. I think coming off of training camp, they had injuries. Guys didn't play in the preseason. So they're still feeling their way throughout, I think, getting Mike Williams back really going. I think he should be a part of that offense. And I'm hoping to see more Braylon Allen tonight. I think he can be somebody that can take some of the burden off of Rodgers, Garrett Wilson, and Breece Hall, adding some more just parts to this offense, I think, will help. But I think Aaron Rodgers can lead this team the way that's needed for them to go win. The defense has to play better. And I think they have something and they have a formula that they think they can win with. They have to just play to that. We don't need Aaron Rodgers to be MVP Aaron Rodgers. Just we need him to be the quarterback that goes out there and wins the games.
With offenses being a little bit slow early on in the season, I think that this is a common thing that happens pretty frequently the month of September. Yeah. For the most part, I think it's kind of turned into preseason football. But why do you think it is that defenses start off the year almost ahead of the curve over offenses?
Well, we used to always talk about this in New England. Bill Belichick, Bill would always say, you know, September is just an extension of the preseason, just what you just said. He said, as a coaching staff, we're still figuring out what's the right mix of guys. Do we have the guys in this locker room that we think can help us go win, or do we need to go look elsewhere? So you're still trying to figure all of that out in the game setting. But I think defenses, you can just go and be aggressive. I think offensively, you're trying to figure out, all right, how are we going to game plan? What's the matchup we want? What's that? And offense is such about timing that until you get all of that timing right in the passing game, you know, double team blocks, guys working together, doing that time and time again, you have to build that. And I think preseason and where everything is, you're not in pads as often. So, like, those things that you used to be able to do for a long period of time in training, you don't get to do that as much. And then you're not getting the game reps in the preseason game. So these offenses take a little bit longer while these defenses are saying, hey, just cut it loose. Go hit somebody. Go do whatever you need to do. And when you do that, you usually kind of create chaos, and that plays, I think, to the defensive strength.
Devin, there has been frustration by some about the offenses being down around the league, as I had previously mentioned and butchered a little bit. But one suggestion came from Mel Kiper, who said that the NFL suggested, maybe didn't say it, but he suggested that the NFL should ban too high safety because it's smothering offenses. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Absolutely ridiculous statement. I mean, I think about when I played in the NFL and I first got to New England, you know, Coach Belichick's time at the Giants, they used to beat up on receivers. You think back to the Patriots, the Indy rivalry. That was a lot of cover two, hitting receivers. Rule comes in, illegal contact, can't hit him within 5 yards. By the time I get in the NFL, you play cover two against Tom Brady. You play cover two against Peyton Manning or Drew Brees. Those guys were going to eat you up. It was going to be a game where they might only have 4 incompletions, 300-some yards, because they were going to just pick it apart, take what the defense gave them. And you look, and it's like, well, why can't quarterbacks still do it? They can. They're just not doing it. So to try to ban something because offenses can't figure it out, that's like we should have banned Wildcat when they first put that in back in the 2000s because defenses couldn't figure it out. Eventually they figured it out. And now you randomly see Wildcat here and there. But for a while, you were seeing it every week from every team. So these teams are going to continue to run too high looks. It's not just all cover two. It's just a shell. And from that too high shell, two safeties deep, sometimes the safety drops. Sometimes the teams are just doing things because they see it's making it tough on quarterbacks. So I'm all for it. Let's see more of it. Let's see it in every game this weekend. Make it tough on these quarterbacks and these offenses.
Devin, I agree it would be a ridiculous thing for the NFL to ban. I think there's no reason for that to happen. But let's live in a fantasy world where it does happen. What would defenses do to adjust to a world in which they're not allowed to play too high shells?
You would go back to, you know, for a period of time, everything, you know, look at Seattle, Legion of Boom. A lot of things turned into single high. Earl Thomas was a guy that stayed in the middle of the field, would run balls down, run out and hit people. But the years that we had our run in New England, we turned into a single high defense. I was playing the middle of the field. So teams can get back to doing that. And the threat of that always is you're going to be one-on-one outside. You got to have good corners throwing the ball over top. So I think if they did ban it, the next thing that would happen is the corners and safeties should get paid a lot more money for how they have to cover and what they need to do. So if I was a young corner, a safety in the NFL, hey, go ahead and ban it. Just make sure that that money that you just have to now reallocate, spend some more money into my account, pay me more, because it's going to be even harder to stop offenses if they decide to ban that.
Devin, I know you got Thursday Night Football tonight. I know we got Pat's Jets on Westwood One. People are going to hear it right here on our station. But we've been having a conversation for about 3 years about our starting quarterback and the fact that as of yet, we've not consistently seen the top five, top seven, top 10 quarterback that the Browns traded for. And so I'm just curious for this year, because I think there's a little bit of impatience out there from fans and from media. You know, how long, and or rather, when do we need to see that Deshaun Watson buy this year for us to finally be able to buy into it, or for us to finally just be able to breathe a sigh of relief?
I think it's a consistency thing. It's a week in, week out. If I'm a fan, and, you know, obviously everyone talks about the contract, but, you know, you sign a guy and not just how much you're paying him, I think what you also have in that locker room. You have one of the better defenses in the NFL. You have threats. You went and got Judy. You have Amari Cooper. Like, you have all of these different people that's there right now. And I know the offensive line has been banged up a little bit, so that plays a part in it as well. But you want to see this week three, week four, week five. You want to see the guy that you were hoping to see every week. I don't think as a fan or even the Browns as an organization, I don't think you can sit there and say, you know, by week seven, we need to see it. Like, we need to see it now in the games we need it in. Like, you know, I think Deshaun, he played well enough for them to win and go beat Jacksonville. But I think when you have a guy of his talent and what you've invested in him, you want him to be the difference. And if, you know, the game is close, of why you win the game. So I think, you know, you need to see that from him, you know, starting Sunday and continue to build upon it, because that's the type of team you have. They should be thinking about, we're a contender, we're one of the best divisions in football, but we expect to be in there in the playoffs and have a chance to hopefully play for a Super Bowl, because they have that kind of talent in that locker room.
Devin, given the consistency issues, given the latest legal issue with the latest lawsuit, and Sunday, the opener against Dallas was maybe his worst game as a Cleveland Brown, and then this last week he has very much a bounce back game. If you're in the locker room, you know, you're one of those vets. You've played in the NFL for this long. What's your message to Deshaun if he's maybe struggling with confidence or struggling with finding it consistently?
I think you just support him. I think outside of, you know, the legal things and then on the field, he's dealt with a lot, even with losing people. I think it was his father and a friend. I think that, like, that's a lot going on. I think when you talk about being in a locker room, guys are usually very in tune to that because you experience a lot of things together. So I think hopefully the players and the different people in the organization are building around him and support him in things outside of football, because we all know, like for me as a former player, I know the things outside of football affect you on the football field. So I think it's helping him kind of get through those things. And then it's cutting it loose. It's guys stepping up on offense, making plays for him. I think one of the biggest factors for him to be even better is getting Conklin back out there, getting your guys out there to, you know, complete what you've built from a roster standpoint, because no quarterback likes going out there and you're playing without your two tackles and different injuries. So I think that's definitely a part of it, but I think those guys just continue to support him, show up for him, talk to him, keep him light, keep him going, because, like, again, the NFL nowadays, the team, it doesn't rest solely on the quarterback, but you probably won't win unless you have a good guy playing quarterback.
Devin, great stuff, man. Can't wait to hear you on the call with Ian Eagle tonight right here on this station. Appreciate your time, bud.
Thanks, man. You guys have a good one.
You too. Devin McCourty there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Let's get into this, because Amanda Guerra, who was on the sidelines for CBS this weekend, in-game dropped this tidbit on Deshaun Watson and Deshaun Watson, how he's trying to get righted going into this week and in this situation in Cleveland.
Well, Chris, we were able to sit down with Deshaun Watson last night, and he admits this week has been very tough for him. In fact, he said, "I didn't have the mental clarity to get ready for this game until about Wednesday." But here's something he wants people to know. He said, "I'm not trying to be the same quarterback I was in Houston 4 years ago." He explained that back then he felt like he needed to be Superman every game. With this Browns offense, he says, "I trust him a little bit more where I can be a facilitator." That said, we all saw the struggles with him in week one. So his goal for this game is completions. Those dynamic plays we used to see, he says those will come with time.
That is courtesy of CBS. I saw your tweet about it. Would you just like to read it on air so we can begin?
So normally I'd be at these games, mm-hmm. right? Like normally I go to almost all the Browns games. I didn't go to Jacksonville, so I was home.
It's Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, that had a lot to do with it. I told you, like, jokingly, not jokingly before the show, I'm only taking direct flights this year. If I have to connect, I'm not going to the game.
I especially get it for Jacksonville. That's a rough thing to have a layover in Atlanta for.
Yeah, no. So I didn't go, so I was home watching. And when she said that, my jaw became unhinged from my mouth and hit the floor. Why is this... Why is what I tweeted so... Why is it controversial?
So I don't think it is. I think it's more that we constantly go to the $230 million.
What they paid.
Yeah, I'm aware that's what they
and
paid.
And it's the picks even more than the money over something like that.
But it obfuscates the real conversation, which is day-to-day, minute-to-minute, how is Deshaun performing, not versus the expectations of when he was traded, but of what he's been here.
Has he lived up to the trade?
No, he hasn't.
Okay.
But that can be true, and you can also look at Sunday as a step in the right direction. And because here's the thing. I think people instantly went to game manager quarterback.
Had one of those here.
Well, and so that's a fair conversation, but that's not Deshaun's fault. Like, Deshaun didn't trade for himself and give him $230 million.
Here's the tweet. Here's what I tweeted. Deshaun told the CBS crew that he's not trying to be the quarterback he was in Houston. He trusts the talent here more and just needs to be a facilitator. Is that anything false about that statement?
There's nothing false about that statement.
I continue. The Browns probably would have liked to have known they were getting, quote, a facilitator before they gave up three number ones and $230 million. Is there anything false about that statement?
Yes.
What?
Yes, because what? I think this is what Kevin Stefanski wants.
You think this is what he wants?
Yeah, I think Kevin Stefanski...
You think when Jimmy Haslam, Andrew Berry, and Kevin Stefanski got together on the plane, on the flight down to Houston, Jimmy put his arms around the shoulders of Andrew and Kevin and said, all right, listen, we're going to go get a facilitator, and we're not going to take no for an answer. If he tells us no, we're going to add another zero to the check. And we're not going to take no for an answer. We're going to go get a facilitator.
I wouldn't put it exactly like that.
What part is wrong? What part is inaccurate?
I think Kevin is a lot more comfortable with more control and lesser quarterbacks. And so, to me,
you see Joe Flacco play last year?
Yeah, and by the way, Kevin had a lot more pre-snap control and a lot more control in general because it was just do what I tell you to do and you'll be fine. I think that's where Kevin and a lot of really smart coaches are more comfortable than we're going to let this guy make plays on his own on things he sees in real time because that gives us less control.
I think Kevin is really good at adapting the offense to the talent that he has.
I don't see – is he? Because every quarterback – and I will say, Baker and Jacoby are not the same quarterback, and Joe Flacco and Baker are not the same quarterback. But a lot of those guys, their comfort level is in doing – like, I agree Kevin is good to flip some of the nuances and include things that fit within the purview of his offense. I also don't think I've ever seen Kevin completely tear down and rebuild an offense around a uniquely talented, skill-setted quarterback.
Well, I think they tried to do it week one, and how'd that work out?
I don't think that's because I don't think that's fair.
But we're getting off of the point here of this, like, that's the entire it's all I tweeted.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's Deshaun's fault for signing the contract.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying the Browns would like to have known that they were getting a facilitator because you know what? They already had one in the building.
See,
and they were trying to get better. And that's why they did what they did.
But I think so. It's less that anything you tweeted was wrong. And I think it's more. One, we've already seen Deshaun not be the most comfortable with messaging externally. That is not part of his skill set.
Yeah, I've noticed. I picked up on that.
Versus like a Joe Flacco. And I do think that holds him back because everybody heard game manager when he said that. I think he's just trying to mimic the words that Kevin Stefanski has said.
No, I think he's not the same guy he was. And I think that's becoming very apparent to everybody. And this is the first year where people have to come to terms with that. Because when the trade was made, a lot of fans did not like the trade. Right? Fair?
Yeah, fair.
And this whole situation was dumped on them. They didn't ask for it. And they had to come to grips with that. And they reasoned that, hey, they got one of the top quarterbacks in the league. And that's what they held on to. And they didn't see it the first year because of the suspension, whatever else. And they thought they were going to see it last year. And they didn't see it last year. And then he got hurt. And now you're coming to grips with what he is. He's not the quarterback that he was 4 years ago. But they're, like, it's okay to point that out. The emperor has no clothes.
Yeah. It's also okay to say he's not been that guy yet and wonder if it's still in there. Because within that, like, last year was a step in the right direction. So the two things can be true, which is a cliche I know we all hate now.
We are into year three of a contract, and we're talking about taking a step in the right direction.
And he's played 14 games. So that's, and, I mean, how much of that's really on Deshaun? Deshaun didn't get his actions led to a 11-game suspension, but he can't control that. Like, you can't control you got hurt with a shoulder, which right now is the bigger concern for me than anything else other than the latest lawsuit.
So you think he's going to be the quarterback that he was in 2020?
I don't know.
He just got done telling you that he's not going to be.
I don't know, but when I hear, I think he was trying to parrot what Kevin has said. Kevin has told him since he got here, in my offense, just take the easy layups. So I don't, again, I don't think
but
this
they
is
had
some,
a quarterback here who could take the easy layups. And by the way, like I thought they had to do better than Baker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not changing that. Like the Baker thing is really complicated. I don't want to go into the whole thing again, but it was a complicated situation. He was coming up at the end of his contract. They didn't think he was good enough. The Baker you see today is not the guy who was here. I was in that locker room. The Baker that you see in Tampa has been humbled and humiliated by multiple stops in the NFL and almost having his career end in front of him. And I don't think that the Baker you see in Tampa necessarily would have been, they would have ever gotten to that point here. My only point is you had a facilitator here. You had a game manager facilitator here. You traded for a guy who you thought could win you a championship and elevate the entire franchise and do things that nobody else could do, and you are not getting that guy. And that's the only thing I pointed out. That's it.
I think saying that he's taking the easy layups now, or however the phrasing that he used there, I think that's something we're probably talking about now. If we're having the same conversation, if he's healthy and we're talking six games from now and it's still just dink and dunk and you don't get those more elaborate shots down the field, I'm probably exactly where you are. The only thing I'm saying is when everybody's shouting, it's over, it's not happening, that's a fan deadline. That is us trying to box this thing up to protect ourselves. This thing's going to happen. Like, he's going to play until the wheels absolutely come off or until this guy figures it out and we see the old Deshaun. I think a good starting point for this year is take the easy victory laps and make the big plays when you possibly can.
And just so, like, I know people think I'm totally out and totally against Deshaun, and I have soured on him dramatically from where I was even 6 months ago. Something in my brain broke when he said what he said at the Greenbrier, mm-hmm. and I wrote what I wrote over the summer. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah. I just feel like, and again, with this whole conversation, I just feel like everyone keeps trying to move the goalpost on what they thought they were getting when he got here, and now we're celebrating small, silly victories like 186 yards and the fact he didn't throw an interception.
I don't think that's the victory we're celebrating.
But I also see the play, the escape that he made that everybody is seen 100 times by now to get out of pressure, the sideline pass to Judy, the absolute dart that he threw to Judy 30-35 yards down the field. Yeah, like that's what you need more of. You need to see more of that. And mm-hmm. it's clearly it's in there, but the great quarterbacks show it every single week, and I just don't think it's there anymore.
So, I will say that you and I agree on Deshaun's messaging and Deshaun's relatability, which are I don't know that it's even a bigger issue than it is for Deshaun himself. Like, he's not helping himself when he says those things.
Yeah.
Because it sounds defensive instead of vulnerable, which is probably how you can get people to endear yourself. But if you just put Deshaun's performance on 186 yards and no passing touchdowns, I think that is a gross oversimplification of what he actually did on Sunday.
Okay, the offense scored one touchdown. Is that as gross oversimplification?
What about eight drops in two games? What about three massive holding penalties or massive penalties in a row that took you from third and manageable to third and 36?
They had four offensive linemen commit holds. That's unbelievable. That's got to get cleaned up, obviously. Do you know his expected completion percentage was basically identical to what it was? Basically identical. Like his CP, and like, I don't want to get in the weeds. I know a lot of people don't get into it, but like, if you look at the game and you look at the advanced stats, his completion percentage was almost identical, within 1.5 percentage points of what he actually was. Drops are part of the game. Of course, Amari Cooper should have caught that. Yes.
What about Elijah Moore and I think Jerry Jeudy in the second half? Because those were drive killers. Like those are real things.
I could point to every single NFL game and show you he should have caught that, he should have caught that, he should have caught that. That's a drive killer. It's part of the game. I'm like, yes, they should have caught those balls. They should have. I'm just telling you, when you look at the whole picture, his completion percentage and his expected completion percentage were almost identical.
Did he show more playmaking ability on Sunday? As much as we've seen in individual games previously.
I thought the first drive was excellent.
I thought the David Bell throw, the David Lee Roth, as I'm calling it, the splits in the air,
yeah,
as he was throwing across his body, I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I thought the Amari throw was actually right on the money. I mean, you could nitpick it and say move it an inch here, and
it was close.
But
it wasn't perfect, but it certainly should have been caught. Absolutely, it should have been caught.
I think it's fair to say if your message on this whole thing is it's not $230 million worth, I totally get it. I'm not here to argue that.
And I think you have to give fans. If you want to support him and like root, go ahead, do it. He's your quarterback. Yeah, support the guy. But there is a large percentage of fans who didn't want him here, who are upset by the trade, who he has not lived up to. And now I don't think we've seen enough indication to ever believe that he can get back to being the player that he was 4 years ago. And this is the first year where a lot of fans have to sort of process that, because they've held out hope all this time that they were getting Houston Deshaun. Houston Deshaun is gone. He's not coming back.
But
I don't think he is.
But I think the concern is that I don't know in the intermediate. I understand big picture. It's constantly, he hasn't been here. That's totally fair. But week to week, that's not the conversation you have in September. That's a conversation you have when you have six or seven or eight games of groundway, I don't know what the hell that means, of evidence to say, well, hell, these next six games look just like the first two games, and now that's when excuses are real.
If he plays the next three games, the next 3 weeks, if he plays like he did in Jacksonville, the Browns are going to have a chance to win the game at the end of the game, and that's all you can ask for. And you take that and you run with it. he's going to have to play drastically better than what you saw in Jacksonville for them to survive this season and have the type of season
financial
this team's capable of having.